English on Radio Canada International's African service. We're now broadcasting on the following frequencies. In the 16-meter band, on 17875 and 17820 kilohertz. In the 19-meter band, on 15325 and 15150 kilohertz. And in the 25-meter band, on 11945 kilohertz. In about 5 minutes from now, you can hear the Shortwave Listener's Digest, but to begin with, it's the news.
Good evening. Poland's military rulers warned the West today that economic sanctions against the Warsaw government will only prolong martial law and bring more suffering to the Polish people. The warning was voiced at a news conference given by four leading figures in the military administration, which assumed power nearly a month ago. At the same time, authorities lifted censorship of reports by foreign correspondents, but say they must file by telex through government facilities. As censorship was lifted, government spokesman Jerzy Urban told the news conference, "The tougher the restrictions by the West, the longer will be the democratization process." The spokesman added, "The authorities have sufficient means to survive, but society will have to go short if necessary." Deputy Premier Janusz Obidowicz, who is head of the country's economic council, complained that Western countries have compounded Poland's economic problems by freezing credits. He said Poland's debt, mainly to the West and including $400 million to Canadian banks, now amounts to $28.5 billion, and he adds there will be more will be added when last year's food purchases are included. Mr. Obadowski also said the country cannot rely just on its partners in the Soviet bloc. He said it needs Western technology and pointed out that much of Poland's industry was built up on Western licenses. Poland has announced that telephone links throughout the country will be restored on Sunday. But Polish authorities warned that censors would break into what they called subversive telephone conversations when they saw fit. The authorities say the resumption of telephone communications was brought about because of the improvement in social discipline and the observance of martial law regulations that were imposed on December 13th. Poland's national airline, LOT, is to resume flights to Canada and other nations starting on Monday. Warsaw Radio says LOT will be flying mostly between the Polish capital and the European cities. But several flights a week are planned to and from Montreal. A moderate earthquake has shaken Canada's three maritime provinces and sections of northeastern U.S. The quake measured 5.9 on the Richter scale, but there were no reports of damage or injuries. It was the first significant earthquake detected in New Brunswick, Nova Scotia, and Prince Edward Island since February 8, 1885. The federal government has ordered a special study of Canada's foundering fishing industry. But some industry spokesmen say that unless the fishery gets immediate help, it could lie in ruins before the report is finished. The study group will be headed by Michael Kirby, the government's number two public servant. Mr. Kirby, a former aide to Prime Minister Pierre Trudeau, will also become Deputy Fisheries Minister after patriation of the Constitution is completed later this year. The group is to begin work immediately. North and South Yemen have agreed on a draft constitution under which they will merge into a single state. A South Yemen spokesman says the draft constitution provides that Islam will be the official religion and the North Yemeni capital of Sana'a the government seat of the new United Yemeni Republic. For nearly two decades, the two governments have been conducting unity talks punctuated by sporadic military skirmishes along their border. North Yemen has been backed by Saudi Arabia, while South Yemen has been supported by the Soviet Union. Guns fell silent today after 4 days of street battles involving rival Lebanese militiamen from pro-Iranian, Iraqi, and communist factions. A police spokesman says the fighting left 15 dead and 55 wounded. The spokesman in Beirut says armored units from 22,000-man Syrian peacekeeping force are enforcing a truce that began at midnight in seven neighborhoods of mostly Muslim West Beirut. An Egyptian delegation has left for the U.S. for talks on the possible purchase of more U.S. arms. Egypt will soon get the first of 40 sophisticated F-16 jet fighters from the U.S. and has just concluded a $1 billion deal to purchase arms from France. Among those arms are 20 French Mirage jet fighters. The Nicaraguan government says it has uncovered a foreign-aided conspiracy to blow up industrial plants and assassinate government leaders. The Interior Ministry says 15 accused plotters have been arrested. That was news. I'm Greg Gingras.
You're tuned to the African service of Radio Canada International. Everyone, and a very good evening to you from me, Ian McFarlane, and welcome now to the first edition of the Shortwave Listener's Digest for 1982. The first edition that didn't get battered to death by the winter weather in Sackville, that is. Last weekend was largely a write-off as far as the African and European services were concerned, and a partial write-off for the North American service. As a result of this meteorological ineptitude on the part of old Mother Nature, which showed up in the form of the worst snowstorm in 10 years out in the Maritime provinces in eastern Canada, a storm which dumped some 60 centimeters of snow and freezing rain on our Sackville transmitter plant and antenna farm, amongst other places in the Maritime provinces last weekend. The Shortwave Listener's Digest wasn't heard on the African service last Saturday or on the 0100 UTC broadcast on the North American service on UTC Monday. So, no doubt a good many of our listeners missed the program last weekend. So, in view of the fact that there were two very important features included in last week's program, those were Glenn Hauser's annual year-end review of the shortwave world and Harry Magny's test report on the Panasonic RF9000 receiver, part of the program this week and next week will be including a repeat airing of those two items. Glenn Hauser will be getting the repeat treatment tonight, and Larry Magny will be with us in the program next week. So, Glenn, the podium is all yours for the first part of your look back at 1981.
In 1981, we welcomed some new stations to shortwave, Radio Kiribati in the Pacific, The Voice of Hope, Lebanon, Radio Antena Libre, Ecuador, La Voz de la Mosquitia, Honduras, Radio Transamazonica, Colombia, XEUJ, Mexico, and Adrian Peterson solved the Burmese mystery on 5060. It's coming from Tong Yi. Our breath was bated for the promised appearance from New Orleans of WRNO. Returning to shortwave activity were Africa Number 1, Gabon, XEXQ, Mexico, Radio Uganda, Radio Yemeni, Bolivia, Galatasaray, Israel, Radio Clarín, Dominican Republic, to the displeasure of the Cubans who jam it, and I wish I could add Radio Caroline. Costa Rica finally disposed of Radio Noticias del Continente, which claimed to have solidarity from Sweden, Canada, and many other Latin American countries, but which later provoked an airplane hijacking. And Radio Noticias may still have another life to live. Little was done in the U.S. to stop anti-Castro pirates, so La Voz del Cid, Radio Cuba Libre, Radio Libertad Cubana, and many others broadcast as they pleased. And Radio 15 de Septiembre turned the tables on the Sandinistas, who showed their true colors by responding with jamming. Ethiopia put its nationalized Radio Voice of the Gospel facilities at the disposal of South and Southwest African liberation. Strike upon strike upon strike crippled Radio Canada International. But labor difficulties also disrupted external broadcasts from Israel, Bangladesh, and Poland. Radio Free Europe was bombed, Jack Anderson would say, in more ways than one. Less serious difficulties faced Deutsche Welle. Their power bill was overdue, and the post office threatened to turn them off. At about the same time, Voice of Germany recognized North America with expanded broadcasts in English and began a continuous world service in German. More cuts were forced on the BBC external services, but in the spirit of compromise, only Spain, Italy, and Malta are no longer served in their own languages. There were doubts that Israel's North American service would last or that Spain would be able to continue broadcasting in English. Andorra finally asserted its authority over foreign-owned broadcasting stations, putting them both off the air, along with World Music Radio. But the real issue was control of television satellite channels. Two stations which survived 1981 were Capital Radio Transkei South Africa and Radio New Zealand. Coup d'etat in Bolivia and Thailand had a marked effect on radio, and as usual in the Seychelles, FEBA decided to keep quiet, including their new 100-kilowatt transmitter. Making better use of new facilities were HCJB with 500 kilowatts, KTWR with two new 100s, Radio Renascença of Portugal with one. The United Arab Emirates evolved from a rare country to a regular one on North American dials. Radio RSA began broadcast to South America, the voice of Nigeria to North America, but we still hear their other services better. The BBC added another relay base in Lesotho, the voice of America in Botswana and Antigua, though the QSL department was the last to find out. Belgium moved more and more out of band, for the time being, and is just now adopting the innovation of external broadcasting in English on medium wave. As the authorities looked the other way, Ireland became more and more of a shortwave broadcasting country, unofficially. Denmark, Sweden, and Norway are all improving their shortwave facilities, and Finland would dearly like to do the same. Iceland suddenly became audible for everyone simply by moving to a clear frequency in the 22-meter band. But the real pioneer of 22 meters was Radio North Star International. Moving to new bands made all the difference for listeners of Paraguay and Cook Islands on 25 meters, Antarctica on 19, and Algeria on 11. I'll be back in a few minutes with transitions affecting people and stations in international radio and a look at the year's anniversaries.
Thanks, Ken. 1 week ago last Friday, just 1 hour into the new year on the GMT UTC clock, you may have noticed something a bit unusual on one of the religious broadcasting stations in the United States. At that time, the Voice of Free China began broadcasting 3 hours of programming to North America on 5985 kilohertz, part of which was in English. Taiwan is using the facilities of WYFR, Family Radio in Florida, for this relay. The United States now officially recognizes only mainland China and not Taiwan. Now, Steve Azrati reports now this new VOFC relay in the U.S. may just turn out to be somewhat more complicated than the simple international shortwave relay agreement that it would appear to be on the surface.
Exactly 1 hour into the new year, a new voice came on the air in North America. For 2 hours, it talked in Chinese. Then, at 0300 hours Greenwich time, it changed into English.
This 60-minute English program can be heard every day from 0200 to 0300 Greenwich Mean Time in Central America on 11.855 MHz. And from 0300 to 0400 Greenwich Mean Time in North America on 5.985 MHz. Taiwan, the Republic of China.
WYFR usually broadcasts Christian programming. The Taiwanese programs are not in that mold. They include news, commentary, music, and lessons in Chinese. WYFR belongs to Family Stations, Inc. in Oakland, California. I asked Harold Kemping, the company's president, how he felt about the programs, and he said, I feel quite comfortable with it because Taiwan is a friend of the United States, a good friend. Tom Schaff, International Program Manager at Family Station, said WYFR broadcasts the voice of Free China in return for Taiwanese transmissions of family radio to the Far East. He emphasized that no money changes hands and no contracts have been signed. Mr. Schaff said, we are meeting our license requirements to serve the people of the Western Hemisphere. And, in fact, we just doubled our service into Canada. What we are really doing is acting as a broker, and the rent is paid in airtime. Tom Paulson of the Policy and Rules Division of the Federal Communications Commission in Washington said the rules for a program exchange permit swaps of airtime only if they promote international goodwill, cooperation, and understanding. He paused and added, I guess it's up to the State Department to decide who is the better friend. What he was referring to is that the United States has diplomatic relations with Peking, not with Taipei. In the past, Peking has lowered its diplomatic status when offended by another country's dealings with Taipei, as in the case last year of the Netherlands after Holland sold a submarine to Taiwan. Jonathan David, a lawyer at the Federal Communications Commission, emphasized that the FCC has always been careful not to intervene in program content because of U.S. constitutional guarantees of free speech. Mr. David warned against any assumption that the mere airing of Taiwanese programming was by itself inimical to the interests of the United States. But the commentaries of the Voice of Free China are intended to be irritating in Peking. Taiwan even says it differently, calling it Peiping with a P, as in Paul. Taiwan Radio thinks of Taipei as the capital of all of China and ridicules such things as Peking's attempt to write Chinese in Latin characters. And just to irritate Peking more, it brags of the nations that have retained their diplomatic ties to Taipei. James Menard, spokesman for the East Asia Desk at the U.S. State Department, was taken by surprise when asked about the broadcast, saying, this is the first we've heard about it. Meanwhile, listeners in North America can hear Taipei via Florida nightly at 0100 hours in Chinese, changing to English at 0300 hours. It might have been Israel Radio instead, because Mr. Schaff said that family stations had talked to many foreign broadcasters about swaps, including Israel. Reliable sources indicate that the deal was close to conclusion when religious pressures inside the Israeli cabinet made the deal fall through because of objections that evangelical broadcasts would be aired by Kol Yisrael.
That report was from Steve Ezrati in Cleveland, Ohio. And Steve will be keeping us informed of any changes in this most interesting shortwave situation. And speaking of changes, here's Glenn Hauser once again with a look at some of the changes and anniversaries that occurred over the past year in international radio.
Turning the tide in 1981, CBC Radio gained outlets in the U.S. via Minnesota and National Public Radio. Now some local American stations carry As It Happens, Sunday Morning, and Nightfall. Night fell forever on these people involved in shortwave. Among the well-known DXers departing were Grady Ferguson, Richard Pistek, and Mark Meehan. In Guatemala, Gaspar Culan of La Voz de Atitlan met the same violent fate as William R. Woods 3 years earlier for trying to improve the lot of the Indians. Other transitions. To the dismay of his fans, David Monson departed Belgium for points unknown. At CBC Radio and RCI, As It Happened, Elizabeth Gray replaced Barbara Frum. Wife and husband Bronwyn Draney and Patrick Martin turned Sunday mornings over to Barbara Smith and Russ Patrick. And Jim Coward moved from Montreal to Inuvik Northwest Territories. At Radio Netherlands, Dodie Cowan is still his, but not on the air. At HCJB, Clayton Howard turned DX Party Line over to Roger Stubbe. The Voice of America passed from the hands of Carter appointee Mary Bitterman to Reagan's men Charles Wick and James Conkling, and Philip Nicolaides, who caused quite a flap by suggesting that propaganda is not so bad. At the same time, a Radio Marti or Radio Free Cuba was being planned for a January 1st air date. Was the year of clandestines for El Salvador. First, Radio Liberacion, then the longer-lasting Radio Venceremos. An even smoother transition took place July 1st, as the Voice of Malayan Revolution went off and Voice of Malayan Democracy went on. Radio Mujahideen switched to a much longer name, Voice of the United Muslim Fighters of Afghanistan, Votum Foa. And it was joined by new clandestine stations for that country, such as Radio Free Kabul, some from within on FM, but with support from Soviet dissidents without. On April 13th, AFRTS Washington became AFRTS Los Angeles. Papua New Guinea accomplished a three-way frequency switcheroo, to the consternation of list loggers. Contrary to previous years, time changed in the USSR and Finland for the summer, and so did their programs for listeners abroad. Those new little ham bands at 10, 18, and 24 megahertz began to be occupied experimentally. The two best DX programs deleted DX from their names. Now they're Media Network and SWL Digest. It was the International Year of Disabled Persons, and RCI began offering program schedules on tape. But the U.S. Handicapped Aid Program continued beset by internal strife. Media Network innovated with a computer broadcast experiment, to be followed by another January 28th, and Radio Netherlands became the first and only international broadcaster to encourage continuous listener response by phone. Slow scan television tests continued from Israel and also from Sweden. Dick Speakman succeeded in reviving a DX program on Radio Australia called Spectrum. And the year went by at the BBC without a World Radio Club. In 1981, the cities of note for major conventions were Thunder Bay and Bern. Except for a certain Canadian broadcaster and his DX program. 1981 was a year of anniversaries. The 80th for Marconi's first transatlantic transmission. The 20th for the North American Shortwave Association. The 25th for the Danish Shortwave Clubs International. The 50th for shortwave broadcasting from France. The Vatican issued stamps marking the semicentennial of Vatican Radio, as did Ecuador for HCJB, which also got a license renewal until the year 2000. And one listener's coinage of a way to pronounce shortwave listener in only two syllables, that is, swiller, seems not to have caught on. Shall we give it another year? For SWL Digest, this is Glenn Hauser.
Well, maybe even another decade, Glenn. How do you feel? Well, thank you very much indeed, Glenn, for that interesting look back at the past year in shortwave and international broadcasting. As Glenn mentioned a few minutes ago, David Monson departed Belgian radio for Points Unknown last year. Well, we're very glad indeed to let you know right now that David is alive and well, and we can also tell you that the Parts Unknown that he departed for is South Africa. David is spending some time visiting his parents there. There are a lot of shortwave listeners around the world who sorely miss David's unique style of broadcasting, and who are looking forward to hearing that he's back on the air once again. Well, while we can't tell you when that day will be, we can let you hear a taped message that we received from David via Jeff White in the U.S. Unfortunately, it arrived too late to be included in either of the last two editions of the program, but better late than never, we'll play it for you right now.
There's a kind of gray haze over the distant hills. Well, not that distant, really. Perhaps a few kilometers from where I'm sitting, speaking into this microphone and to you eventually, I hope. They cut, the hills do, they cut a clean, sharp silhouette against the clearest and the bluest of skies today. Somewhere, there's an agitated early morning rooster, or late morning rooster. It is, after all, nearly midday, but time really doesn't mean that much around these parts, and African roosters haven't heard yet of Japanese electronic accuracy. Anyway, it's at that time of the year that I love best, and so do you, I'm sure. And everything it means, or should mean, to us, Christmas and New Year, beginning all over again, taking up whatever you've got left to take up, and launching out into Anno Domini 1982. I must be brief, I could go on, but it isn't necessary. I've got a message, and it's not one that I'm going to be able to address individually to all you most wonderful people beneath a northern or a southern sky this season. That is, all those listeners to international radio. So, since I'm not able to do it individually, I'll do the next best thing and steal a bit of airtime on this channel. You see, the object of this whole exercise is just a correspondence over the years, and whom I know, I can call friends in the true sense of the word. All those of you I might never have met, but will have the opportunity of meeting perhaps in 1982. Well, to say to you all, wherever you might be, I'm going to be remembering you, especially this Christmas and New Year. And I'll be holding thumbs, that's myself, David Monson, I'll be holding thumbs that all your dreams, even your wildest ones, hopes and aspirations, see the light of day in 1982. And maybe you'll just cross your fingers for me, too.
Well, we'll do that for you with pleasure, David. And all you listeners out there, cross your fingers right now. And here's wishing you good luck, David. Perhaps one day soon we'll hear your signal working its way once again around the Earth. Another of the items in part two of Glenn's year-end review concerned the fact that 1981 was a year of trial and tribulation for the handicapped aid program in the United States. Well, that certainly has been the case, but in a year-end message from Al Schwanicki, the president of HAP USA, the news is good. And the news is that things are very much looking up and running much more smoothly now. Al asked us to pass along his message to you, and we're happy to be able to do that right now. May the joys of the time and celebration be with you throughout the year ahead. We especially wish to express our appreciation and best wishes to those shortwave listeners and their clubs who supported us with their donations and their encouragement throughout our trauma of reorganization and consolidation. I can say with all assurance that the HAP USA is well on the road to stability and service to the handicapped, the ones who need so much to widen their horizons. As president of HAP USA, I want to express my genuine wish to each and every HAP that the blessings of this time of the year may abound for you, and that the future may be brighter and more enjoyable. I sincerely desire that HAP USA can have a part in making that future brighter. Blessings and joy to you all from HAP USA, and the best of everything for the coming year in shortwave listening and DXing. And that message was from Al Schwanicki, president of HAP USA. If any of our American listeners would like to offer their services to HAP US or take advantage of the services offered by HAP, Al would be very happy indeed to hear from you. Drop him a line at this address, HAP USA, Route 4, Box 32, that's 32, Rolla, R-O-L-L-A, Rolla, Missouri, 65401. And the address for the Canadian branch of HAP for our Canadian listeners is CHAP, C-H-A-P, Post Office Box 3096, Station F, that's F for Frank, Scarborough, Ontario, M1W, 3, P for Peter, 5. And now that the special International Year of Disabled Persons has come to an end, I think it's most important that all of us make sure we don't just let the whole matter slip from our minds, but rather carry on and build on the successes which have come out of 1981. Perhaps we can just simply consider 1982 as being IYDP plus one. Just because one special year has come to an end, there's no good reason why we can't consider the next one in the same light. There are still a great many handicapped people to whom we can introduce the fascinating activity of shortwave listening. Both Al Schwanicki and I, on behalf of all the others who are involved with HAP branches in other parts of the world, would very much like to urge everyone to continue and even increase their support of what HAP is trying to accomplish, and to encourage others to lend a hand as well. Shortwave listening is a great pastime. Let's not keep it a secret. Share it, especially with a handicapped person who can get so much value from it. Well, we're sorry to say that due to the fact that we had to repeat Glenn's year-end review this week, we haven't got time to get in any DX news, but Glenn will be back with his usual DX news report for us next week. And that really is all the time we have for this week, so from me, Ian McFarland, here's wishing you all the very best of luck, good listening, and cheerio for now. See you next week.
You've been listening to Radio Canada International's final English broadcast of the day directed to Africa. We've been broadcasting on the following frequencies. In the 16-meter band on 17875 and 17820 kilohertz. In the 19-meter band on 15325 and 15150 kilohertz. And in the 25-meter band on 11945 kilohertz. Our next broadcast in English can be heard at 1800 hours UTC tomorrow on the following frequencies, 17820 kilohertz in the 16-meter band and 15260 kilohertz in the 19-meter band. We're always glad to receive your comments on our programs, and if you'd like a free copy of our program schedule, write to Radio Canada International, Box 6000, Montreal, Canada, H3C3A8. Now, good night from Canada.